Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell. Coming up, facing protests at home, the government of Sudan dispatches warnings abroad, threatening conflict over Abyei.
I really think that the issue of Abyei is of big importance to the regime in Khartoum, and that for them it's really something where any kind of compromise is very, very unlikely.
And in a German court, a policeman is fined 10,800 euros for the involuntary manslaughter of an asylum seeker from Sierra Leone.
Die Stimmung im Zuschauerraum war angespannt. Das Gericht musste auch die Zuhörer mehrmals ermahnen.
The mood in the courtroom was tense. The court had to warn members of the public not to interrupt the reading of the verdict by shouting out loud. Africa Link comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Stay with us.
Top story.
A report just released by Amnesty International is calling on Sudan to end its violent repression of student protests. The rights group says many protesters have been arrested or injured during a week of unrest in the country and accuse the Sudanese police of using force excessively. But what is the reason behind these protests? Here's Sarah Kamara and Isaac Mugabe with this fact box.
On 6 December, the bodies of Adil Mohamed Ahmed and Mohamed Yunis Nil were found in the canal near the Al Jazeera University buildings in one of Sudan's capitals. The next day, two more bodies were found in the same canal.
Circumstances surrounding the death of these men were unclear, but they were among 53 students allegedly arrested by the National Security Service officers during the peaceful sit-in at the university. Their death is believed to be linked with the involvement in the protests, but authorities said they were drowned.
The sit-in was a protest by Darfuri students against the refusal of their university to register them without paying full tuition. Under the Darfur Peace Agreement, students originating from Darfur are to be exempted to pay tuition fees.
The death of the four students sparked protests which spread across Khartoum and other parts of the country, with students denouncing the death and calling for the government to be replaced.
Early this week, another protest started in a university in Khartoum, but was countered by pro-government students and police. Some of them were allegedly beaten and dispersed with tear gas.
Amnesty International's Audrey Cochran urged the authorities in a report to stop the alleged repressions on peaceful demonstrators. The Sudanese Minister of Justice has promised to establish a commission of inquiry to investigate the death of the students. This is an addition to a wave of protests which began in June this year against a government austerity plan that has seen an increase in price commodities.
Isaac Mugabe and Sarah Kamara. As well as being confronted by dissent at home, the regime in Khartoum also faces a string of long-standing disputes with its neighbour, South Sudan. Khartoum has just warned that a new conflict could flare up in Abyei, the contested region on the border between Sudan and South Sudan, which both sides claim as their own. The warning from Sudan comes after the expiry of a deadline on December the 5th, set by the African Union for the clarification of the territory's status. Florian Dehner is based in Khartoum, where he is the representative of a German think tank, the Friedrich Ebert Foundation. I asked him why Khartoum was adopting this belligerent tone over Abyei.
Well, the issue of Abyei has been disputed between North and South for quite some years now. It was one of the contentious issues which was not solved in the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement between the two parties, and which ever since has been caused a lot of devastation in the climate between the two countries. Now Khartoum is worried that the Security Council might impose a solution onto the parties which is not in their interest, as they believe, why their tone gets a bit more rough.
You're referring to the UN Security Council. What shape or form could that solution take?
Envisioned solution, which was formulated by the Mbeki Council of the African Union recently, was that of a referendum for the people of Abyei to decide whether they want to stay in North Sudan or if they want to join the newly independent South Sudan. Issue in question here is, what does resident mean and who would be eligible to vote in such a referendum? If you would only include people who have permanent residence in Abyei, you would exclude the nomads, namely the Misaria, who come for some months in the year into Abyei and who would like to have a say in the future of that region as well. If you exclude them, then it's quite sure that the Ndinka Nok, the permanent resident population in Abyei, vote with overwhelming majority for secession from the north and joining South Sudan.
And presumably no agreement has been reached over who should take part in the referendum.
No, that's the main question, because the issue of who will vote will, of course, determine what will be the outcome. If the nomads are excluded, then it's very clear that Abyei will become part of South Sudan, and that, of course, is something that the North and the regime here in Khartoum does not want to see happen.
So is this referendum likely to go ahead anytime soon?
Well, that definitely not. Even if everything would work out the way that the African Union Council would like it to see and that South Sudan would want it to see, even then it would at least take 1 year to prepare for the referendum. But if no kind of agreement with Khartoum can be reached on that issue, it's to imagine how such a referendum would happen without causing a lot of warfare and destruction in Abyei.
Can you see Sudan really embarking on a fresh conflict, or are they just trying to get South Sudan worried?
I really think that the issue of Abyei is of big importance to the regime in Khartoum, and that for them it's really something where any kind of compromise is very, very unlikely.
Florian Dehner from the Friedrich Ebert Foundation in Khartoum.
Africa Link. Because Africa is more than just a headline.
A court in the eastern German city of Magdeburg has fined a policeman €10,800 after finding him guilty of involuntary manslaughter. The case revolves around an asylum seeker from Sierra Leone who met his death in a police cell on a burning mattress. His hands and feet were tied. This report now from Assumpta Latus.
Uri Jallo, an asylum seeker from Sierra Leone, died on January 7, 2005 in a police cell in Dessau in eastern Germany. The police maintain he set fire to a mattress with a cigarette lighter while bound hand and foot. He died within 2 minutes after inhaling the intensely hot smoke. He had been brought to the police station because he was alleged to have molested women while under the influence of drugs and had resisted arrest. Court spokesman Christian Loeffler explained why the accused police officer had been found guilty of involuntary manslaughter and fined €10,800.
The accused failed to meet his legal obligation to exercise due care. He knew that the asylum seeker was under the influence of alcohol, and it was to be assumed that he had taken other drugs as well. For this reason, he should have been kept under close surveillance, visual surveillance. The accused failed to give proper instructions in this respect. He also knew that his own office was some distance away from the cell where the asylum seeker was being kept.
The judge, Claudia Mettling, said the court assumed Jallo had laid the fire to attract attention to himself. The judge also said the accused, whose full identity was withheld under German privacy laws, could not have saved Jallo's life after the fire had broken out. She also said he had been subjected to court proceedings lasting 8 years and massive public pressure. Christian Loeffler was in court when the verdict was read out.
The mood in the courtroom was tense. The court had to warn members of the public in court not to interrupt the reading of the verdict by shouting out loud, but for the most part, the verdict was delivered in a fairly peaceful atmosphere.
The fine of 10,800 euros went beyond the 6,300 euros called for by the public prosecutor. Jallo's family had called for the accused to be convicted of grievous bodily harm, manslaughter and kidnapping. They did not believe that Jallo had set the mattress on fire himself. The family have a week to decide whether they wish to appeal the verdict.
Assumpta Lartis. Islamists now dominate northern Mali, and in neighbouring Niger, Tuareg tribesmen fear the conflict could spill over into their own country. Niger is itself wearily familiar with the tragedy of armed conflict. Bettina Rull has been to Niger to meet members of the Tuareg community and to hear what they're doing to try and preserve peace. Her report is presented now by Susan Holton.
The soil is heavy and muddy. It clings to the hoe with which Mohamed Kouda is trying to loosen the earth. Kouda and his brother have come to clean up what's left of their garden after a severe flood devastated it. The two brothers are members of the Tuareg tribe and live in the village of Ifeouani, a mountainous region in northern Niger. If it starts raining again, Kouda is afraid that his entire crops could be destroyed. It wouldn't be the first time. It was not an easy decision for Mohamed Kouda to start life as a farmer. The 40-year-old fought in both Tuareg rebellions in Niger. After a ceasefire in 2009, he gave up his gun. The government had promised him and 4,000 more Tuareg rebels a future in peace. However, the government didn't keep its promise.
I work in my garden. I don't have another choice. We didn't receive anything from the government when we gave up our weapons. 90% of the former fighters have nothing. We will survive somehow, but it's not easy.
Despite his dissatisfaction, Kouda no longer believes that armed uprising are the answer. They change nothing, he says, but each time the population pays a high price. But now he fears that people in Niger could once again turn to rebellion.
This is a real danger because Niger is surrounded by politically unstable countries. Libya in the north, Mali in the west, and in southern Nigeria where there is the Islamist sect Boko Haram. Of course, this has an impact on the situation here. Since the collapse of the Gaddafi regime in the region, weapons have been circulating and are easy to come by. There are many young men here who have no work but know how to use a gun, and the Nigerian government must take this threat seriously.
Residents of Ifeouani gather as a mixture of traditional and modern music blasts from loudspeakers set up on the dusty ground in the village square. The HED Tamat organization has invited them to a special Forum for Peace and Development. The NGO has been organizing such forums in 11 locations in the Tuareg region of northern Niger. Manu Agali heads the NGO that also gets financial support from Germany.
We got the idea of this peace forums because we do not want a repeat of the Tuareg rebellions like the one in Niger in 2007.
That report was written by Bettina Rühl and read in the studio by Susan Holton.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear for the sixth episode of our series, A Girl Finishing School, about illiteracy and education. The holidays begin very well for Latifa, and Papa Wali's business seems to be back on track. What's more, the metal worker is listening to his employee, Epifane, more and more. Thanks to his evening classes, he is finding out how to improve their business. Zakia's tourists, on the lookout for traditional handiwork, do not complain about Papa Wali's manual finishing. So, finally things are better at home, and Papa Wali takes responsibility for paying back Mamua's loans. Life is looking brighter. For 2 days now, Latifa has been allowed to accompany Zakia and her tourists on their tours. It's lunchtime, and they're all eating together on the mountain. This is the sixth episode entitled Latifa Takes a Shortcut.
Latifa, You don't seem to have woken up from dreaming yet.
No, not really. Oh, Zakia, this place is so romantic. It makes you dream.
She's right. It's like a piece of paradise.
Thanks, Roland. It's a great spot for our agency. We try to protect it as much as possible, also for the tourists like you. But the villagers looking for firewood and especially poachers don't help us much. Sometimes they even start fires to scare the animals. It's terrible. You can't imagine.
Do they know it's a protected site?
Of course they know. They come anyway because there's no one here to patrol the place. But the agency has been running an environment awareness program for a few months now.
That's great.
We give them some basic lessons and ask them to volunteer to look after the protected spaces themselves.
Wow. How long have you been at the agency?
11 months. It's my first job.
May I ask what your qualifications are?
Heritage and tourism. Now I am doing communications.
And are you married?
That's a personal question which I choose not to answer.
My apologies. You're so young and so mature at the same time. It made me curious.
Excuse me, please. I have to take this call. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hello, Elinam. Latifa, come here. It's your brother. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Zakia?
Everything is fine. What happened to you the other day?
I'm sorry, Zakia. I had to prepare a presentation for university. What was the news?
I'll let Latifa tell you herself.
Okay, put her on then.
Hello, Elinam.
Hello, sister. I'm trying to guess, but I'm holding back. Go on, spit it out.
I passed my exams.
Wow, great. I knew you would. Well done, my little sis.
Thank you.
And you know what?
No.
I got my scholarship.
Really?
What did he say?
He got a scholarship at last.
Wow, so cool. Elinam, come back during the holidays so we can celebrate.
All right. Latifa, are you interested in taking the entry exam for students who want to become medical assistants?
What would this mean exactly?
You would study medicine for 3 years, then become a medical assistant. Like a little doctor, if you like.
Is that what you want me to do?
You have to decide. But keep in mind the financial advantages and the job opportunities. You seem to be better at sciences and our hospitals need staff, whereas the other sectors are going through a tough time.
How much time do I have to think about it?
Not much. The exam is in 2 weeks and you have to register 72 hours before.
Okay. How about tomorrow? Will you call me back? I'll be with Zakia again.
Okay. Speak to you tomorrow, girls.
Speak to you tomorrow, boy.
Latifa, you shouldn't hesitate so much. Just take the risk. You can always take other courses later if you want.
I wanted to have your opinion first.
If both your parents were right behind you, you could go as far as you wanted. But you have to take shortcuts so you can protect yourself as much as possible from any nasty surprises.
You're right, Zach. I'll take the exam. I think the tourists are getting impatient.
You're right. Let's go.
After their trip to the mountain, Latifa, Zakia, and the tourists set off for a small town. Each day, the tourists discover a site that is even more fabulous than the last. The medical assistant entry exam takes place all over the country, so Latifa is lucky to be able to take it in her small town. She is overjoyed to discover that she is on the shortlist of those who have passed. Shortly afterwards, Mamua gives birth to a baby girl, and Latifa has to cut down on her going out to help her mother. Soon, it's almost time for Latifa to move to the capital, where the only medical assistant school in the country is located. But then one morning, a volcano erupts in Papawali's home.
Latifa, what do you really want to do? Do you want to kill us?
What do you mean, Dad?
You made sure you went back to school instead of helping your mother at home, and you didn't say anything. You passed your exams as you wanted. And now that your mom just had another baby, you want to leave home to live with your brother and go to this medical assistant school.
The porridge business that you looked down on was what fed you in this house. It's what clothed you and paid for your school materials. And today, you dare tell us your future does not lie in porridge? Latifa!
Papa, I'm just going to Elinam so I can take a course that I can't do here in town.
Of all the courses there are in this town, you had to go and find the only one that you can't do here. Latifa!
Elinam recommended it to me.
Is Elinam your dad now? When he comes home, he's going to be in for it. That's for sure.
Nobody said anything when he left. On the contrary, he got everything he needed in his suitcase.
Elinam is a boy. When he gets a job, he'll come back with his wife, God willing. And while he makes sure we have everything, his wife will help me with the housework. But you, Latifa, if you don't help us today,
When are you going to do it? When you're at your husband's looking after him and his parents?
Mom, I'm not asking you for anything. Not for the course, not for my rent, not for food. I just want permission to go to town and succeed in my life.
Oh, excuse me. I'm the one who hasn't succeeded in my life, am I? Who's been putting these ideas in your head? Your friend?
Dad, don't tell me you don't understand. Defend me for once in your life and explain this to Mom.
Defend you and say what? You always do what you want anyway. You're not even asking for permission. You're just informing us, that's all.
I'm asking you for your blessing, Dad.
Did you ask for our blessing before taking your exams or this entry exam? Did you even tell us you were taking such a test?
I'm sorry, Dad, but I was worried that you would refuse.
So why are you telling us now? What if I were to say no? Of course, you'd just take your suitcase and go.
Dad, I want to succeed so I can help you later.
Spare your tears. You'll need them when your child does to you what you're doing to me now.
Hey, Mamua, what are you saying? Are you putting a curse on your daughter?
Does she deserve anything else?
Everything but this. She might not be very obedient, but she's making us proud. She's been helping you up to now, and you can't treat her like a piece of garbage just because she wants to leave. Now you're going over the top.
Who's going to do the cleaning instead of her? Can you picture me washing the baby's nappies?
I'll do it. No problem. Latifa.
Yes, Dad?
You can go. Pack your suitcase and I'll take you to the station when you're ready to go.
Thank you, Dad.
I have to go now. I've got work to do.
Is that all you've got to say to me? Wally, you wait till she comes back pregnant. That's what she can expect if she goes to the big city, with all those hooligans having their way with innocent girls from the provinces.
3 days later, Latifa set off for the capital where her brother Elinam was waiting for her. Her best friend Zakia was in tears at the bus station. Her dad also found it hard to hide his emotions. Mamua, however, wasn't even there to say goodbye. In the capital, Latifa moved in with her brother and registered at the School of Medical Assistants. Will everything go well? Will she be safe in the big concrete jungle of the capital? What will happen? To find out, tune into the next episode of A Girl Finishing School, a series about illiteracy and education. To listen again to any of the Learning by Ear episodes that have already been broadcast by Deutsche Welle, visit our website www.dwworld.de/LBE. If you want to write to us, just send an email to lbe@dw-world.de. Thanks for your loyalty and all the best till next time.
We are the future of Africa.
And education is our key to success.
Here in Africa, radio is the most important medium.
That's why the Deutsche Welle has developed a special program for young listeners called Learning by Ear.
With radio dramas and features written by African authors.
The topics are politics, health and social issues, the environment and economy.
Want to hear more? Tune in for our next program.
Or visit our website at dw.de/LBE. Learning by Ear.
We are the future of Africa.
And before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories here on Africa Link. The rights group Amnesty International has called on Sudan to end its violent repression of demonstrations by students. A policeman has been found guilty by a German court of the involuntary manslaughter of an asylum seeker from Sierra Leone and fined €10,800. We've also been hearing about concerns that the conflict in northern Mali could spill over into Niger. Please remember that we welcome your comments on this programme. You can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de. That's feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Africa Link will be back again at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.